Well, we will start on the Q&A. Q&A, come reporting of meditation. Then after that, followed by a short Dhamma talk. Okay. Anybody wants to report their meditation first? Yes, Ellen. Maybe on the line. Yes.
Brother Stuart, just want to clarify. When we do awareness of the in and out breath, is it necessary to just concentrate near the nostrils? Because sometimes I notice I just have awareness of air going in and air going out.
Yes.
Not specifically on the nostril.
Oh, okay.
That's first question. The second question is when I'm aware of the breath, I'm also aware of my heartbeat and vice versa. Okay. Am I mixing the two up?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So for your case, it's very straightforward. Salad. You have some choice. You can either try certain thing and like develop your own understanding. There is no hard and fast rule. More important is you have developed the ability to be mindful of the in and out breath. As this mindfulness comes, you realize that the awareness is also capable of being mindful of other parts, like your heartbeat, and also you can actually focus onto the nostril there. That will develop what they call some form of absorption. Absorption means you like stay there away, understand? Means you don't do the normal anapanasati, like breathing in, the mind is away, breathing out, the mind is away. Then if you stay focused or develop absorption of the nostril, that one you can try, because that will lead to some form of concentration, meditation. But it's okay, you can try. When you just stay aware around the nostril area, then this area will start to like go into absorption. Your breathing still go on. The mindfulness of the in and out breath still go on. But now you are centered around the nostril there. Then you realize you become more and more calm, more and more calm. Then as your anapanasati become more and more strong, more and more stable, it will become like very dense, very this mind like absorb into it, like it's no longer with the normal awareness, it like go into absorption. It absorbs into that, no thought, nothing, just there. Then the awareness will make it more and more strong. Then energy field will build up. Then after that, you can find out for yourself what happened. Because for those who do jhana and retreats, the energy field will push up and do a lot of things. Then sometimes you will start to see nimitta. Even before the absorption comes, you start to see nimitta. Then when this absorption comes, your mind become very like very still, very concentrated. Then during that time, when you are holding on to that concentration, you can have a lot of clarity. You can know a lot of things too. But that one is a conditioned state, so you can understand both the state later on. Because last time during the early years, in 1975, the first year I entered MU, I don't understand what is meditation. Then the very first day I was there, there was some conditions. One of my classmates, after dinner, I think, we were staying in First College. He is a Terengganu boy, So Wee Chong, and his Sui An and Bifong know them. out of the blue, he asked me, you got anything to do or not? I said, no, first day come, nothing to do. I take you somewhere. He didn't say where. So I end up in science faculty, one of the lecture theater. First time I enter a lecture theater, I don't know what is a lecture theater to. Then I saw one monk, bald, speak very good English. Later on, I came to know he was none other than our chief reverend, K. Sri Dhammananda, the late chief reverend. There was so much joy. The first time I heard somebody could speak so good English and talk about the teaching on Dhamma. I already knew I don't need to search. The Dhamma is what I need. Just before I came, actually. Then, after hearing that talk, I was full of joy. Then I went and approached him. As usual, a lot of students will approach him after he finished. Then I just want to take down the address. Where can I meet him again? So he gave me this Brickfield address. That's how I end up in Brickfield immediately after that. So what happened was that night, because he also, I think, don't know at that time, he keep on pointing to the forehead here, you know. He said, look into your mind. So that night, I don't know. So I thought, here is the mind. So that night, I went back. First day, you know, in the uni, I was put into a room with a senior, third year student. But this senior is a very good senior. He's very kind to me. But you see him, you will panic because his hair is like aerofoil, huh? The like beehive, like that one, big one. But he liked music. He's I think Malay, but he's a very good Malay. Later on, I came to know him quite well, and he helped me in quite a lot of things. So what happened was, I scared I disturbed him because he's a super senior. So because of him, I was protected. When all those people want to go around ragging all the new students, they opened the door, saw him, sorry. They moved to the next room. Yeah, they know this guy cannot touch. So I waited for him to sleep. Then I waited until midnight, 12 o'clock. Then I want to try meditation. I don't know what is meditation. I just sat. The moment I sat, I become very calm, very fast, very still. Then, because Chief Reverend pointed the hand to the forehead, he said, look inside. So I look inside. Yeah, my eyes were closed. When I look inside, I saw this light, bright spot, like nimitta. Then, because I was very calm, I can play with it. If I want to focus, I can just focus. Then it go. Then after that, I realized I become very calm. As I become very calm, I decide to give it a push, an energy. And I was so surprised. You know. Nobody teach me meditation. I don't know anything about meditation. The moment I give it a push, that mind went into what they call infinite space. You know. It's like my mind traveling out to infinite space. It's like the whole universe, space, infinite space. The energy just go out. Then I was so calm and so still and so blissful. Then after a while, I just withdraw. I thought at the most half an hour. I look at the watch, 4 a.m. I have been sitting there for 4 hours. I never sat before. Then I got this type of energy inside, so still, so strong. Then that time, I don't even know what is anapanasati. But this thing was so strong. Then the absorption also. And the energy was with me for 1 to 2 weeks. I was carrying this energy with me. So that time, I became very interested in meditation. So I did a lot on my own at night. After I went to Brickfield, the funny thing is, the chanting, morning chanting. I hear the chanting, like very familiar, like something I heard before. Then when I went in, They gave me a chanting sheet. Not one sheet, but 2 pages. Then I listen. The moment I listen, I know how to chant. like very familiar. Also. So I started from there. Then during that time, I really don't have any clue as to what that true teaching is. So I got a lot of free booklet, like you all get a lot of this free Buddhist booklet for free distribution. Then there's a library, you know, Buddhist, selling Buddhist book. I just lay my hand on all the book that I'm interested in. I remember I took one book, Abhidhamma. I don't know what was Abhidhamma. No? So I asked the girl, you say this is a higher teaching, very advanced one. Oh, I said like that, then I buy one. Then there were other books. That time I don't know what is meditation. Then I read, but I like Chief Reverend's talk where it's on general Dhamma. And that one actually helped quite a lot. It gave me a clearer picture of what the Dhamma is. Then his book, What Buddhists Believe, actually helped me a lot. But later on I realized, to really develop the cultivation, you cannot rely on Chief Reverend, because he come this line, his purpose is different. His purpose is very beautiful, very genuine. He is here to share this initial Dhamma so that people get interested in the Dhamma. Then from there, they will move on their own. And his book was so popular, translated into so many languages. And a lot of Buddhists in Malaysia actually became Buddhists because of him. I was one of the product from him. As I later on, after 1989, I got this gratitude. There was one day I purposely went to Brickfield, wait for him to be alone. Then I approached him and talked to him. Then I told him, Chief Reverend, I said, thank you so much. It was your this book, What Buddhists Believe, the first edition, that actually bring forth a condition for me. Then the first day in the university I met you, so I told him a little bit about it. And I said, I have a lot of gratitude. Yeah. Because by then I already knew what that thing was. He kept on smiling. He was like full of joy or so. He said, yeah, he said, you are very lucky, he said. Then he liked my children. That's why during the novitiate program, there was 1 year, I think 1980, I forgot what year, 89 or 88 or 87, I forgot it. Actually, if you are underage, you cannot join one. But both my children got to join because of him, no? He gave them special permission. So there were a lot of things. So what I want to tell you is, that time I was trapped in this concentration meditation. Then I did metta. My metta very strong that time. My metta, I tell you, some of the story I told before. That time really, I read it until from the heart come out and no words on. Initially, you have to verbalize to have the feeling to read it come out. Then later on, direct from the heart come out, no word on. And I can feel a type of energy, very soothing. And that energy I know. Even the animals, non-human, everything they will know. And that time, you are really like enlightened, full of metta, full of loving kindness. Then my energy was so strong. Then it developed until one day, my heart here, the whole heart now, like 3-4 inches diameter. There's an energy inside there, so steel. Like a steel rod inside there. You know, it's a steel rod, no? So steel. Even lightning strike cannot even disturb, cannot even come near. It's just like on the external, you know, because it's so still. And the mind like cannot move at all, no matter what happens. That was when I was doing the meditation all the time. Later on, when I came out to work, when I start to go into career life, encounter what they call society's challenge, then I realized everybody was trying to make money to have financial freedom and all those things. So because of the job nature and the work, as a civil engineer, I do a lot of work. Then that time, I seldom meditate. You know why? Last time I was very free as a student. Whenever free and I do. Then when I'm alone, I do. Later on, when I come out as a civil engineer, you know, a lot of dinner, a lot of entertainment, and a lot of what they call people invite you. Especially later on when I was in University Malaya, all the colleges, they keep on inviting me. Then sometimes the faculty dinner, the university official dinner, then you got consultant, you got contractor. So during that time, more towards materialistic, then didn't meditate so much. Then I realized here, start to move again on the heart here. And here I say, what is this? Then I realized what the Buddha meant. No? I read about the analogy, like a glass of water. If you don't stir, the dust settle down, then the water look like clear. But the moment there is condition, you stir, this latent tendency, which is the settle dust, still there, will arise again. That's why it becomes murky again or cloudy again. So the defilement was the same. So I realized all of the concentration meditation, the thought-based meditation, actually cannot free you because all these are suppressed. Understand? It cannot come out. The energy field is too strong. Concentration is too strong. Then I realized that it's not the final product. Then I start to read more, find out more. I was looking for a teacher. But very funny, I came upon some Buddhist friend from Singapore. He sent me a lot of books, tell me a lot of things about which teacher very good, that teacher very good. So that I also, because I joined the Buddhist Society, all these books for free distribution all came. Ajahn Chah, Chan Mahabhoa, and Chan Buddhadasa, even Long Potet, all the things, and the Sangharaja, all the things. Then later on, I met my first real teacher, Ajahn Yantra. He was the one that explained to me and told me. He said the highest meditation. So I thought, because I heard from the disciple, he also got jhana and a lot of fantastic concentration meditation. But surprisingly, he, like Ajahn Buddhadasa, started with jhana, end up with the so-called mindfulness vipassana meditation. Then he just told me, he said, remember, dear, is it the highest meditation, is it the real meditation? He just say one sentence. We choose aware every action, every moment, within the moment, in the present moment. I just heard that. Then I realized, hey, this is the real meditation, highest. Means I have yet to do. I have not done this before. Because mindfulness was not something that is often described or spoken. So then I try. I realize, split second the mind is gone. Split second the mind is gone. You can hardly be mindful. The only time I can be mindful is when I'm in the sitting concentration stage. Last time when I hold this jhana concentration, then I can be mindful throughout the day. But that type of mindfulness is a conditioned state. Understand now? You cannot be tested because the anusaya, the defilement, all suppressed inside. The energy field is too strong. That's why later on I realized what he meant. You had to release out all those concentration back to normal awareness. Yeah. then develop sati, daily mindfulness, until you can be mindful of all action, all movement. Actually, that was sati sampajana. Mindfulness, actually, a comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment, described by the Buddha in the Satipatthana Sutta. Then all of a sudden, the thing connect, dawn upon me. No wonder this is a real meditation. Highest, I said. It was described in the Satipatthana. Then that time I got a lot of joy. Then I followed him for many years. I followed him even to his temple, Kanchanapuri in Thailand, a few times. Then I met him in Australia twice. Then when he was in Malaysia, I joined him. Everywhere he go, I go with him. That one I must thank Ramananda and Sister Sumitra, because they were the one that introduced me to him. So he was a very good monk. He also got a lot of metta, and his daily mindfulness was very good. And he was the one that teach me how to walk. The one I show you. Walk to the end, just tuck. No need to rotate your leg. When you reach the end, you just turn your head and reverse your step, then you walk back. Then I saw him walk. Hey, so fast one. Then I start to understand. I said, yeah, this is mindfulness. Because mindfulness is awareness. Awareness is sati. Sati is awareness before the knowing. So that time, I just do. Then I understand. Then I knew what that thing was. And within 2 weeks, the daily mindfulness came to me, because in the past I cultivated before. Then there was so much joy, because the mind was so different. And the moment the mindfulness came, all of the Dhamma just fall into place. I just understand things like on its own. No need teacher. He only teach me a few things, very basic, essential things. First thing he talked about is body is a body, mind is mind, mind never the body, body never the mind. We choose to take care of mind, because mind is very important. But later on he said, the body is important too, because we need it to harmonize with the mind, to develop this cultivation, to develop this understanding. But we don't attach to either mind or body. We use it, we don't attach. That was the first thing. That was the one that enabled me to break through pain and all those things. Because when I was meditating, I tell myself, I only need to know a little bit about the truth of what this mind is all about. And then he started to tell me, the mind and the body, they are different. And then I realized the teaching got right about nama rupa pariccheda jnana. The form and mind, they are separate. You can discern it. You can see the two. They are separate. So when I was meditating, then when I was developing the awareness meditation, when I silenced my mind, during the retreat, I think, I forgot it was 8 precept or retreat. That pain, as usual, developed after a few days, because after long sitting and walking, the pain developed until very painful. And I tell myself, I have to sit through, just like the Buddha underneath the Bodhi tree, as it paralyzed also, never mind. I need to understand the Dhamma, because the confidence comes from my teacher who tell me, mind is mind, body is just a body, never the mind. So I very, very brave. I just continue to accept that reality, relax and silence. And that's what happened. The shift of consciousness came, the mind flashes through, there was bright light. Then, all of a sudden, within the same instant, the whole pain no more. All those things that arise, all no more. Then I was so amazed. I said, wow, really like that one, the mind. So inside the meditation, I want to understand, I want to find out. So I use that mind that has this brightness and energy and very clear awareness. I check again. the same place that was giving me all this problem, I can see, you know, all the tension, the bullying, everything. Everything is still there, you know. But the awareness of it is different, you know. The awareness of it has separated from that phenomena. That's why I come to know. Phenomena is the phenomena. The knowing mind, the understanding, aware of it is totally different, and the two are separate. Then after that, I again check. You know, everywhere I place this mind, I can feel everything there, you know, aware of everything there. Oh, I say, that is interesting. This type of mind is so different. That's why after that, I got a lot of faith, a lot of confidence. Then I developed this daily mindfulness until it's so stable, until I carry it throughout the day, continuously. I remember those 3 years, 86, 87, 88. I was cultivating non-stop, continuously, even while working at home, in the office, daily mindfulness. That's why I say it can be done. It can be done. So finally, when all these things start to happen, my mindfulness, the silent mind, the awareness, just understand the Dhamma on its own. No. None of my teacher explained the teaching to me, I tell you. All the teaching that I share with you come from my own understanding. They only tell me some basic thing. So my teacher tell me Achanyantra, because he was the one. The third thing he tell me was very good. You can remember the first two, What is the first two? Body is just a body, mind is mind, The second one is highest meditation, The third one, that time I didn't even know what is the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. He just remind me, every time I close with him, he reminded me. And he liked me a lot, he liked my family a lot. He said, you remember. No less than 6-7 times, he reminded me. He said, we choose contemplate until very, very clear. Just this message. No? So I reflected on it. There must be a reason why he said that. Then I checked my cultivation. No? Actually, I've been doing that. No? I contemplate a lot. When I'm in my quiet moment, I contemplate a lot. That's why all of the Dhamma that I realized through my contemplation how it helped me and how it enabled me to move on. Like yesterday I was trying to say, before you understand this Dhamma, you cannot understand the higher Dhamma. And before you have this type of ability through your daily mindfulness to see this defilement and realize that type of essential Dhamma, it cannot unfold into a higher level. What I can explain to you is like the Mahayana used the word Dhamma door. You know what is a Dhamma door? You open the door to Dhamma inside Anasana. So if you have no insight into reality and gain certain aspect of understanding, then that Dhamma door won't open Anasana. But the moment the Dhamma door open, inside there is a lot of beautiful Dhamma, the sound of teaching. And all this because you have opened the Dhamma door. If you contemplate, reflect, then you allow this understanding to stabilize, then only that Dhamma become a living Dhamma. You can apply, you can share, you can teach. Otherwise, that Dhamma is only unique to the person who realized. He know what it is, but he cannot explain to you. But he didn't contemplate and reflect on it. He didn't relate it back to life. So that's why contemplation is very important. It stabilizes your understanding. You see, it's just like the first turning, or the Four Noble Truths. The first turning is you hear the proclamation of truth from the Buddha. If you have cultivated from the past before, you can awaken. Wisdom can arise. They call it Suttamaya Panya, means Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha, the teaching of the Buddha. Panya is wisdom, wisdom born of hearing the Sutta. That is the first turning. Then let's say after you hear, you don't quite understand. What must you do? You must reflect, contemplate, and inquire into it. Why did the Buddha say those things? And how can I understand? Just like my teacher tell me, very basic thing. Then I reflect and contemplate. I say, it must be related to the teaching. Then when I reflect and contemplate, those Dhamma that I learned before suddenly just arise. Yeah, that's where the daily mindfulness is. That's how it connects. So I start to understand. Then after I understand, Dhamma is a refinement. That contemplation becomes so powerful. It's just like what I always used to tell you. After you hear already, you reflect and contemplate, you can stabilize that understanding. Understand? Last time you hear about it, but not very clear. If I give you another example, like you attend a lecture, let's say, chemistry or physics or maths. First time you hear the teachers explain, like physics, it's like not easy. Right? You go back, read the textbook, or check with your friend, then discuss. And then you understand. Then you start to assimilate those understanding. So the reflection, contemplation, and inquiry will actually allow you to have that ability. First, it stabilizes the understanding. Understand? The first time you hear, you don't understand. But when it's written out, you can read and read and read, discuss, contemplate, reflect, and understand. This understanding stabilizes. Like the first few times you all listen to me, you all like, in Hokkien say, lia bo kiwa, catch the ball. So very difficult to understand. Then, last time you chant, they all don't understand it. But they'll keep on repeating, same thing. It's not repeating, we haven't got it. That's why I had to say it in clearer manner. So when I did that, actually the understanding was stabilized, because when you are repeatedly hearing the same truth, if you really have the, what they call, diligent to understand, means you are serious about it, then you will not like, why Brother Teo always repeat. You will listen intensely with the faith, with the confidence, just like I have faith and confidence in Ajahn Yantra. Because to me, whatever people say about him, not important. What is important is I can understand his advice, his teaching, his sharing, and I benefited, then I able to use it. That is more important. So if you have faith and confidence in any teacher, understand not? You just maintain that faith. Then you listen. I tell you, the Dhamma will arise. That's why when I listen, everything he say makes sense and it just go in. Means I stabilize that hearing, the understanding of those Dhamma. Then I assimilate it. That is the second turning wisdom. And I did that a lot. Until I understood a lot of things. Yeah. And everything that arises through contemplation. Sometimes I just travel in a car tour or driving. Then sometimes I go spiritual journey or whatever. Then sometimes in a retreat I stand, I just reflect, contemplate. Then everything comes. Sometimes I just walk in the house, I walk. As I walk, the understanding comes. A lot of those sharing and teaching that I came out with and teach you all is from my contemplation at home. Because that time I just throw out one inquiry. How can I let the living being understand this teaching, which is so profound, yet very simple for those who understand? When I throw out this inquiry, whatever topic, not important, the understanding just comes. Because I knew what are the things that I need to speak on. But this thing cannot be explained. I have to relate to life. I have to relate to like how you are, your mental state. That's why I used to tell my wife last time, before my mundane mind collapse, I got less than 9 months to look at it. Well, that time I realized, after this one collapse, I cannot know what happened before this thing. Because like, your mind changed over already. Then before that one, that mundane mind with all the sankara, everything on, earlier on I didn't really have the mindfulness to look at it. It's only towards the end, later part only, I realize this is important. That's why I keep on advising her and some who are quite well developed and trained. I said, remember to look at your mind before it change over or transform. So that later on when you share, you understand why the mind was like that. So those were the contemplation that I did. So after I did all those things, then I realized all of meditation actually lead to wisdom. Understand or not? And wisdom is the real thing that free you, nothing else. Not the energy field, not the fantastic meditation. Then I realized this is what was lacking. And people cannot understand that because a lot of people is interested in fantastic meditation experience. Understand? Oh, I got this experience, I can do this, I can do that. I got this, what they call jnana, jhana, or something. So, meditation was not clearly understood by the what they call general Buddhist community at that time. So that's why, that was the reason why when condition arise after Yun Chan contacted me, I finally agreed to come out and share. And coming back to the question, I almost forgot. I already explained the first part. You can try at the nostril absorption. Then you can go through this concentration. But you have to understand. Otherwise, next time you cannot share. Then you cannot understand what concentration is, how the mind is. Then after that, you withdraw from it. You go back into daily mindfulness. Because anapanasati is to train. Then the hard one is because in the past you did before, but you were not able to penetrate beyond that because you couldn't find a teacher who can teach from the heart. Like you experienced during that time, she told me, every time she reported this to the monk or what, the monk said, don't go to the heart wrong. Go back to your object of meditation. Later on, when you understand, actually the heart is a place you have to go to, finally. All meditation lead back to the gateway, the heart. Unless you do other type of meditation, concentration, energy field, and all those that lead to the truth, lead to the awakening, go back to the heart. Because that is the gateway to connect to your source, your true nature, your true mind. So that will answer your question. Okay, I think Brother Chong, your son, got a question. Ah, yes. Huh? You were asking this one? Oh. What was your question? Pass the mic to you. Actually, thank you for this question. My blog knows I recovered after I speak the number. And now I am more or less 90%. But I don't know whether I go back to night and can hug you. Yeah, you ask your question.
My question was that before I came, yeah. I listened to a lot of like teachings from people like Muji,
yeah,
Gangaji, yes. Eckhart Tolle,
yeah.
And they point directly to the source.
Yes. Yeah.
So I found that with more theory,
yes.
There's more noise.
Correct.
And when you explain that the highest meditation is every moment.
Yes, we choose aware. Yeah. Every action, every moment, in the present moment. Yeah. That is the highest meditation. Thank you. Sadhu. Very good. Young boy. That's why Brother Chong and the wife, we call her Puan Chi, maiden name. They were very lucky, blessed with such a good son. This one got Dhamma, got connection. You don't worry about him. He will become beautiful. You see, all this teaching, like what you came to realize, Krishnamurti, then some call him by what, don't know what Ji, Krishna Ji. Then your mother used to send me a lot of this, from India one. No, Muji. There's another, a few more. The one in the Aroputra mountain one. That one very famous one. What rush already? Huh? There's a rush on it. Maharaja. Maharaj. Huh? No, it's Maharaj something. They are all very famous teacher of the 50s and this. Maharaji, yes. Maharaji, yes. Thank you. Maharaji. Very famous. Yeah, Ramana Maharaji. He is very well known and very famous. Then they got all these teachers later, Eckhart Tolle, the power of the now, also mindfulness, awareness. Then you got this Bhagavati, using the work to question your thought. And that one is fire aggregate or from my mind. But they use one word, thought. Actually, that thought is the mundane mind. That's why you use a lot of thought. You think a lot. So that one is the mental fire aggregate of form and mind. So this one, you need to understand clearly. The fire aggregate of form and mind, you cannot understand, you cannot penetrate the teaching. Because the whole of the Buddha's teaching, after I will go through, I hope I have time. The Four Noble Truths, center on the five aggregate of form and mind. The first noble truth already confirmed. The final summary, the Buddha said. He talked about the reality of life and existence, the eight conditions that can bring about suffering to humanity, to all of living beings. And we have gone through birth, old age, sickness and death. Then separation from loved one and possession and all those things. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, then when you cannot get what you want, your expectation is not met. These are realities that you encounter when you go through life. If you live long enough, all these will arise. So the question is, the Buddha summarized everything about the first noble truth reality. He said, in short, you no need to search further. All of your suffering comes about because of your delusion, sakayadity, that condition you to attach and cling and grasp onto this fine aggregate of form and mind. If this is the final summary, what must you do? What must you do? Let's say now I proclaim to you the Buddha's teaching again. The second turning, what must you do? You must contemplate, reflect, and inquire. How do you inquire? First one is, why did the Buddha say this? Why did he summarize all of suffering as a fire aggregate of form and mind? Definitely he got a reason. For you to put into investigation, so that you can confirm what he say, not to believe him. So now that you know that this is the reason why he wants you to develop this understanding. So the second inquiry is what? How can I understand it? Correct or not? So, where do you start? The third question is what? What is this five aggregate of form and mind? Correct or not? Any student also will ask that way. First, why did the Buddha summarize like that? Means he wants you to investigate into it so that he can confirm what he say. Then how can you understand? I can only understand if I ask what is this fine aggregate of form and mind. So what is this fine aggregate of form and mind? That's why you must meditate and understand it yourself. You can try to read book, you can try to get teacher who can understand and explain to you. But what I found was there is very little information on the five aggregate of form and mind before I came out to share. Everything was like, people dare not write about this thing. They just repeated the summary, that's it. And everywhere you go, here a little bit of information, there a little bit of information. Ah, yes, Chui. Yes. Correct. Yes. Okay, very good. Very good. I explained this. Very good. Sadhu. Thank you, Chui. You see, if you have condition like this question, very good, then I can explain why. You see, even the Buddha also same. Just like Brother Chong's son, you know why he has this understanding or not? Nobody taught him, but he, through his own investigation and study, of course, helped by the mother was the one behind. Then he has the path, he developed it. So when he was looking at all this, he was making the investigation and the inquiry himself. He realized, actually, just now during the meditation, at the door, I met him, the condition is right. He said, "Brother Teo, I got a question. Should I ask you now?" I said, "Later." Then he said, "Question answered." Means what? It's meant for him, understand? Well, he has this clarity that a lot of this theory, understand? They make the mind more confusing, understand? Well, he is a simple person, he wants clarity, he wants to point direct to the truth, that's it. During the Buddha's time, it was the same, understand? I explained to you why. Why all this teaching become more and more and more and more and more and more. It's exactly like the monk's precept, the Patimokkha. Before the community of monks got problem and issue, there was no precept, understand? All the direct disciples, the five ascetic, they just learn from him. Then as it expands, more and more rules need to be introduced, understand? And that's how the Buddha said, okay, we include this, we include that. Then they got the major precept, major offense, you cannot break. Then they got the minor offense. That's why before the Buddha passed away, they asked the Buddha the instruction. The Buddha said, the minor offense is not important, understand? But the major offense, once you break, they have to disrobe you. Why? Because you are not serious about this cultivation, understand? That's why you cannot break. So all this teaching become more and more, more and more, because people don't understand. So when they don't understand how, they ask, they ask, they ask. So just like what I went through, initially when I came out to share, you know, my understanding was, most people are like me, you know, because I didn't know, understand? So I thought you all need the Dhamma. So when I came out and when I first share, it was a very general topic. Then they all find it interesting. Then they asked me, "Relative, can Bill Yun Chan came and see me, said they requested for Dhamma, understand? Can we focus on Dhamma?" Then I said, "Can, no problem." Then I was at this Vipassana Society with them, where we they lent us the premise to use. Where Yun Chan was involved that time. So I saw on the wall the five ascetic. I said, why not we start with this? The first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Immediately after his enlightenment, the Buddha delivered the same sermon. So that was how it started. Then I said, you got any book or not? Let me. Well, I got no book, no sutta, nothing. I only got my understanding. So he said, God, he said, he sent me a Thai Pali chanting book with the translation. Oh, that one was not bad. Fairly accurate. But a lot of English word not appropriate too, but fairly accurate. Then when I read through, I was so surprised. I saw the tree turning there. The moment I saw the tree turning, I understood what the Buddha meant, no? What that tree turning meant, no? And I was able to link back to the three types of wisdom, no? Suttamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya. And these are the three turning. But in the text, nobody write about it. And I can understand how the turning can bring about wisdom. I went through it myself. Then I realized this was what I have been doing for so many years. The contemplation, the reflection. And this was what my teacher told me. So what happened is, when I first started to share, I thought they need Dhamma, so I went into it. Then I realized I can feel, you know, everybody like looking at me, you know. When I talk about the three turning, like so confusing, you know, never heard before, you know, the three turning. Then everybody like, Matthew, can you repeat or not that one? Can you repeat or not? Because that idea like so difficult to sink in, you know. Then later on, I came to realize, what they need is not the Dhamma, because essential, basic teaching of the Buddha also they cannot understand, no. So how to go into the Dhamma? Well, I went into the five aggregate of form and mind. I went into the Satipatthana, let's say, then the ten defilement inside and all. Then I realized, halfway through, that's why I told them, I said, anybody who can understand 10%, he already very, very good. No? Then I had to do the contemplation and reflection and ask myself, how can I allow the living being to understand this teaching, this truth that I have come to understand. Then from that contemplation, I realized the essential basic Dhamma were not there. That's why ever since I went to Suyan's house, I don't teach Dhamma. I teach the essential Dhamma on the whiteboard, remember? Five hindrance, five spiritual faculty, dana, sila, bhavana, three evil, all this. Then the Four Noble Truths, I keep on repeating and repeating. But if this one don't go in, you cannot understand the higher teaching. You cannot understand the real four foundations of mindfulness. You are wasting time, actually. It's just like, before you learn how to walk, you want to fly straight away. You cannot. You have to learn how to stand first, balance, and then fall a few times. And then only after that, stabilize your ability to walk. And then only you can learn how to walk properly. And then after that, you want to run, you learn. So that's why I realize most living beings, they cannot follow, they cannot understand. So that's why I got to slow everything down, reverse the teaching. That's why I come up with so many teachings. Otherwise, no need. Otherwise, if I know you can understand, I just give you a few words, like what the Buddha said. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta. Vedana anicang, vedana anatta. Then, sanya anicang, sanya anatta. Then, sankara anicang, sankara anatta. Then, vinyanang anicang, vinyana anatta. Then, sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe dhamma anatta. Finish. That is what you need. Well, this is what the Buddha teach the monk. At that time, don't have all those dhamma. But after that, they built into sutta. Then they got majjhika, middle length. Then they got nikaya, the long one. Then they got the short one, sanyutta nikaya. Then they got dhammapada word. Wow! The whole Tipitaka, like one library also cannot store finish. But what you want is the handful of leaf, isn't it? Like the Buddha told the five ascetic. He said, Ekosambi in the forest, he picked up a handful of grass, or leaf, not grass, handful of leaf. He showed it to the monk. He said, Bhikkhu, please tell me, which is small, the handful of grass that I hold, or the whole forest leaf? Oh, sorry, the handful of leaf that I hold, or the whole forest leaf that are on the floor, on the ground, and on the trees. So the bhikkhu replied, definitely the forest has a lot more. Then he told the monk, he told the disciples, likewise, he said, what I have realized and understood is like the leaves in the whole forest, he said. But what I need to teach you is just the handful on the ground. the essential Dhamma that you need to awaken. That's it. And he explained what is this handful. I have written it in the what they call email compilation notes that I given to you all last time. It's inside there. So the Buddha said, this handful of leaves, they are actually essentially the Four Noble Truths. That's it. That's why that is his essential teaching. The essence of the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, nothing else. And the Four Noble Truths is very simple. But from there, everything spin out, understand not? So like what Chui want to ask is very good. Too much theory. Sometimes you get yourself bogged down in theory, you know. Arguing over which sutta, quote here, quote there, then you are not interested in investigation. You are interested in right and wrong. I mean, most people, I'm not talking about you, because they become scholarly, you understand? They want to quote here, quote there, then they want to say, it is like that, it must be like that. But Dhamma is a living Dhamma, understand? Living Dhamma is not rigid, understand? Different people do it differently, understand it differently. But the essence is the same. When the enlightened one they meet, they can use different words and explain using their own way. But the essence is the same, understand? Ultimately, it's just the Four Noble Truth. So now I will start with the Four Noble Truth. Otherwise, we don't have enough time. I need the wireless mic. Okay, so this Four Noble Truths is very important. For those who are new, you listen attentively, it will help you. This one is like explaining to you the essence of the Buddha's teaching, which is essentially the secret of life. Especially Stephanie's friend, where is her? Oh, still playing with your handphone, that's why you never learn. Oh, okay, you're taking notes. Very good. Sorry, I got you wrong. I thought you're still reading your headphone. Very good. This is very important for you. The purpose of this retreat is because Stephanie actually wants to benefit you. You came to see me before last time, your brother's problem, I remember. So this is what you need, actually. Then you understand. You see, the Buddha's teaching is not a really a religion. Religion, normally you check in the dictionary. What does it tell you? Believe in God. A lot of religions are centered on believing. But in this case, the Buddha is different. He is very wise. And he can explain to you that all this he come to understand, they are just nature's law that governs all of life and existence. So, the Buddha's essential teaching, essence of his teaching. Oh, Buddha's teaching. Just the Four Noble Truths. Why did he call Noble Truths? Because during the olden days, noble ones are enlightened one, understand not? Because they are very noble in their way they conduct themselves. They are very noble in their understanding of life, and they are very noble in the way they carry themselves, means how they speak, how they act, and how they live life. How they arise their thought, they are very noble. Then they are full of noble qualities. They have a lot of wisdom, a lot of virtue. That's why they are called noble ones. So noble truths are truths that can make you enlightened. Noble ones. So the essence of this Four Noble Truths is like the secret of life, understand? You know what is secret of life, huh? When you know the secret of life, you know how to live life, right? So secret of life, So it's like, according to the Buddha, Everybody can understand this teaching. You don't have to believe him or believe anybody. This is life itself. Means he's telling you truth. That's why it's called noble truth. Truth is the reality, anasana. When religions say they hold the key to the truth, but the trouble with most religion is they try to monopolize the truth, anasana. Then all other religion, no more truth, only theirs. But truth cannot be monopolized. Truth is the reality. Reality means what? Truth is something that can explain the reality. Understand? That's why it's the truth, correct? Not? If you cannot explain the way things are, then it's not the truth, correct? Not? That's why his teaching can explain the way things are. He can explain to you why your life is like that. How come you become so miserable, afflicted? How come those who have the understanding can become so peaceful, so happy, and so beautiful, and so different? Yeah. So why I say it's the secret of life? Because he can summarize all of life, into just this Four Noble Truths. Understand? All of life. You don't believe after I summarize that you tell me whether it's true or not. He said, in this world, yeah, the first noble truth, there is a noble truth that talks about suffering. He called it dukkha. And this noble truth, he said, is a reality. It's not an idea, no. Not a hypothesis, no. Not a, what they call somebody's ideology, you know, or a religion. No? He said, noble truth of dukkha, he said, the world, our this universe, he said, is full of suffering. But he never said life is suffering. No? That's not. So what he's trying to explain to you is, there is a noble truth that talks about the prevalence of suffering. Understand? You know what is prevalence of? Eh? Suffering is everywhere. Eh? Prevalence of suffering or dukkha. And this one describes the realities of life and existence. Realities of life and existence. What are the reality of life and existence? We all have gone through life for so many years. The Buddha said, if you live long enough, you will confront all this reality. Is it? Okay. Everything that involves your life, what are they? Your weakness, birth, old age, sickness and death. Correct not? Correct not? And nobody can escape all this reality. Understand? Not? So the Buddha said, when you are confronted with birth, if things don't go your way, there is complication. Do you suffer? You have seen people with those, what they call cesarean, or baby born abnormal, or the baby got problem during pregnancy, the mother sustained certain type of hazardous risk that can lead to either the mother pass away or the baby have to be discarded. The worst thing is when the doctor come and tell you, I can only save one, tell me which one. That is the worst. Understand? You either save the baby or save the wife. So, birth, you have seen a lot. Then old age, most of us are not that young. You start to experience only, unless you are like Uncle Wee, then he gone through a lot. Then sickness, of course, everywhere you see cancer, all the traumatic disease, even Stephanie's friend, the brother, suddenly just like that, at the prime of his career. And he was so young. That's why sickness and disease, it doesn't matter how old are you. It can happen to young people too. Then death is a certainty. Everybody must confront death. But are you ready to confront death? Do you fear death? What is death? Who died? What died? Now this is a question the Buddha can answer. Answer not. So this four reality is already very, very real and very traumatic. If you confront them without understanding, suffering will arise. You will be afflicted. You will become miserable. Then all of your career success, no more meaning. All of your wealth, no more meaning. Overnight, the loved one is gone. All your wealth, your possession, your investment, your property, everything just gone like that. It can happen due to many things. Understand? So death is only one of the reality. Then the fifth one is the worst. Separation, is it? Separation from loved ones, and your possession, your career, everything. Like just now I described. Separation can come in the form of divorce, when marriage doesn't work out or relationship doesn't work out. So divorce can bring about a lot of traumatic experiences. Separation. Then it can happen during death. You have to separate from your loved one. Then sometimes it's forced separation, during war, during nature's disaster like tsunami, earthquake and all those things. Then when economic crisis, when you make a wrong decision, then your business all wipe off, you have to pay heavily for all those things. So separation is a very serious reality in life. Then the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like. You don't like. That one is pretty easy to understand. If you work for a boss who is very, very, what they call, unreasonable. I tell you, he will give you quite a hell. He will put pressure on you. They used to say management by fear and harassment. They put fear in you, then they harass you to deliver. Then sometimes you can also have people like certain stepfather or stepmother or your mother-in-law, people whom you cannot get along and you don't like. It can give you a lot of problems. Then in the school, the kids are subject to bullies and all those things. So in life, you actually can meet a lot of these people. Nowadays, snatch thief, you also cannot get along. Then you got a lot of this, what they call real life case, like police case and all things. Instead of catching the real culprit, they are more interested in catching you and putting problem into you so that they can gain from it. So these are all possible selfish things. Then after that, the sixth one is, or the seventh one, when things don't go your way. Your way. Or when your expectation are not met. Expectation not met. This one, throughout the day you experience all your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your wrong view, your stirring of your mind, your reaction of mind. This one keep on arising. You expect your boss to understand you and give you a promotion. You expect your loved one to understand you and remember your birthday, then you have a lot of expectation. My brother, my sister should understand me. Yeah? They should love me. They should side with me, not others. So the expectation. So in the career field, you expect to be promoted, but somebody else get promoted. So when things don't go your way, it means you cannot accept that reality. Just like what I used to tell people, the initial first few reality. Everybody can get old, sick and die, but not me and my loved one. This is what people who have attachment will always think. So because of that, when things don't go your way, means when your loved ones or your possession and wealth, they are threatened with separation. Just like what we chant yesterday. So this reality hit, actually. So he said, all this, you check. Which part does it involve your life? Anything about life not covered under here is covered under the 8th one. The 8th one is very simple, is it? In short, the final summary. Actually, it's inside the chanting book, actually. But not explained so clearly. So, if you miss out, you go back and check the textbook. All these words are, I think, they are still there. But the way it's explained, you cannot find in the text. You have to relate to what I share with you, because I can give you example related to life. That's why the teaching become like alive. Otherwise, it's very theoretical. You go to any Buddhist society or any Buddhist community or even the temple, you ask them, what is the 4th Noble Truth? Especially the 1st Noble Truth. Standard answer, life is suffering. Then, what do you mean by life is suffering? Then they rattle this for you. Old age, sickness and death. Is it? Separation. But they cannot explain. They cannot relate. Then even they say they know. When they confront this reality, they still suffer. So the final summary is getting to understand what this form and mind is. Final summary. Attachment to the 5 aggregate of form and mind is suffering. This final summary is very important. So just now we were at here. That's why I want to continue from here. So to understand this final summary, we have to inquire. What is this 5 aggregate of form and mind? Otherwise, how can you put to test? If I don't know what this is, how can I know that the Buddha's words are true? Understand not? Because this one is what he realized is a noble truth from his cultivation he realized. And this one is not specific to him, not his truth. He said the Dhamma was there before him. This truth is nature's law that governs life and existence. And this 5 aggregate of form and mind, if you want to understand, you need to develop some form of... I have to rub this one off. This one is very simple. I need to explain this one. Otherwise, Stephanie's friend will not understand. You see, the Buddha said, each and every one of us, as a human being, I'm not a good artist, lousy. You have a physical body, right? Physical body. So this is your physical form, understand not? Physical body or form. That's why this constitutes your form, first aspect. Then you have a consciousness inside here. I better use the red pen. This one is the mind, or the consciousness trapped inside. Or mind trapped inside. That's why the Buddha said, you are these two, one form and one mind. So the first aspect is this 5 aggregate of form and mind is actually the human being, human being. So these two combine, we have a human being. So this human being is what you think you are, understand not? Now I ask you again, is this really you? What do you think? Is this form and mind really you? You sure tell me yes. Why? Because you have been using it for so long. It's not me, then who? I want to run, I run. I want to cry, I cry. I want to become emotional, I can. I want to commit suicide, also can. Why you say not me? But when you meditate, then you will know why not you. The analogy that I used to give you all is very good. This form and mind, the human being, is like a car and a driver. You know the car and the driver, the two are different, isn't it? The driver that drives the car is a separate entity there. But inside your human body, there is a consciousness that drives you to move and act. Understand? And there is the driver. But you never understand who that driver is. That mind, that consciousness. How it drives this body. How it creates suffering for you. Because when this driver is selfish and heedless, it's just like the one in the car. If that guy never obey traffic light, red light also go, then just drive selfishly, don't care, just want to beat the traffic or go very fast, they encounter a lot of problem. Who suffer? The car suffer. The car cannot bang. Then the car cannot summon. Everything. But when it's a human being inside, you cannot see. It's the same. When you don't train this mind and you don't develop the understanding of life, it doesn't know how to live. Understand? Then what it do? It becomes selfish. It becomes heedless. They got problem, they go and drink. Drown their sorrow. Then torture the body, become miserable. Next day, hangover. Then they go and gamble. Because they want to make money fast. They go and pun. Then they go and cheat. They go and swindle. They lie. They commit sexual misconduct. They violate all the moral rules. Like all the traffic light rules. These are nature's law. You cannot violate. The law of karma is very powerful. So if you are not trained the mind, if you heedlessly use this body, you will get into trouble. That's why this body end up suffering like anything. Then the Buddha said, this mind, you have to inquire deep and meditate and find out, what is this mind? You have to inquire, what can your mind do? What can your mind do? What can your mind do? You have been using this mind for so long. What can it do? You can feel. So there is this ability to feel as well, aggregate of feeling as well. The Buddha called it Vedana. Then, what else? It can perceive. Whatever you want to know, it can perceive it. Perceive it through your consciousness as well. Like this Buddha Rupang, how you come to know about it? You perceive it through your seeing consciousness. Your memory tell you that you have been told or thought before. This is a Buddha image. Then my voice, you can also perceive through your hearing consciousness as well. So this is the ability of the mind to feel, to perceive. Perceive is sanya. Then what else? The third one you should know, it think a lot. Because your mind can definitely think. So think a lot. They call it mental activity. But this thinking, actually got a lot of subdivision. You see, planning is also a thinking. Correct? When you plan, it's also using thought, isn't it? Thinking. Then, when you have fear, worry, anxiety, also mental activity. Instead of thinking, you're worrying. Then, your planning, Your scheming, your cunningness, all these are sankhara, understand? All of your mental state, they are sankhara. All of your mental intention, they are sankhara. Everything that your mind can do, apart from feeling and perception, they are all called sankhara, understand? Just like the Buddha said, this word sankhara is very powerful. He used this word very often. That's why he's teaching, you have to understand what is sankhara. But the book, very funny, they go and translate as conditioned thing. He said, all conditioned thing is impermanent. All conditioned thing lead to suffering. It's not accurate. Sankhara is not conditioned thing. Sankhara is everything that your mind can do. Where when mind arises, everything come to be. Although it has the characteristics of impermanent. This is the one that create the suffering, if you don't understand. Because wrong thought, wrong thinking, wrong emotion, everything also wrong. Then last one, what else can your mind do? What else can your mind do? I give you the Pali word. Vijnanam. It can become conscious of things, isn't it? You have your five basic senses, isn't it? Your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your bodily tactile. Each and every one of these, upon contact with mind, can arise the appropriate consciousness, isn't it? Like your eye. You can see. That's why seeing consciousness can come about. You can become conscious of what you see. You can become conscious of what you hear. Conscious of what you smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. And that is what you are. That's not all. That is the human being. So consciousness is a very powerful gift from nature. That's not all. If you don't have wisdom, if you don't train this mind, you don't know how to appreciate consciousness, you cannot experience life. That's why all of the beauty and wonders of life, you never enjoy, but you encounter suffering, misery. So, first noble truth, reality, keep on hitting you. Keep on making you miserable. Then why do you want to come to this world? To confront all this without wisdom is suicide. It's misery. That's why the noble truth of suffering, prevalence of suffering is everywhere. And I don't know why living beings are so deluded. If you know about this, you still don't want to do anything about it. Who can help you? You keep on blaming. That guy lah make me like that. My boss lah. This guy lah cheat me. My girlfriend lah want to divorce me or want to separate from me. So everything is what? You blame, and yet you get entangled deeper and deeper. Then karma. This life you hurt them, you cheat them, you take advantage of them. Future life you become the victim, they cheat you, they take advantage of you. And then you say, how can my husband do this to me? All those who are pending divorce. But when you did to another person in past life, you never ask that question. How can I do that to her? You never ask. So law of karma is very simple, the Buddha said. The first right view you have to establish. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. Daily contemplation. Every day you must reflect. So if you know karma plays such a big role, you must take care of karma. Take care of karma means what? Avoid all evil, do good. As advised by the Buddha. Then develop wisdom to understand who are you, what are you. All this is what they call condition arising. This form and mind which you call the human being, which you deludedly call the I and the me. This one is the fake one, not the real one. Understand? This one is actually karmically conditioned out. For you to use and to live life. To live life. And experience all of the wonder. All of the wonder and beauty of life. Sorry. You have to meditate to see clearly that this one is not the real one. There is another nature inside, eternal life, never die. And that one you need to connect inside through the meditation. And then you understand. That one also not a human being. That one is a nature. The Buddha called it Buddha nature. Some call it the oneness nature. Some call it the source. Different name. Different religion use different name, but may not be all religion point towards the same understanding. So this is the mystery, this five aggregate of form and mind. The Buddha said, you attach to your body, you suffer. True or not? You worry about the body getting old, getting sick and die. That's why you suffer. Correct or not? You don't attach and you know that this form and mind is not me, then the whole understanding of life is so different there. If it's not you, then what happened? I don't have to worry about you getting old, getting sick and dying. Correct or not? Then I use it to live, oh, so beautiful. So I use it to experience life, to do what I want to do. Because these are like tools for me to use to live life. The body can take me around, create consciousness and sense experience, sense door experience for me to experience the world. The world, the beautiful world of sight and sound. Understand? Then I can also make use of this mind to experience a lot of things. Understand? So the body is like a vehicle to take me around and create sense experience. Then the mind, the consciousness, can allow me to live life, experience life, and learn what I want to from this world. But human being is so deluded. They attach to this body and they live in constant fear. They worry about this body getting old, getting sick and die, the first reality. Then they worry about this consciousness thinking that it's them, feeling is them. They want good feeling, they don't want unhappy feeling. That's not. Then everything they come to perceive like very real, my loved one, my wealth, my possession, my property. But they never know when the breath stops, everything no more yours. Even your own identity also erased. So what is the meaning of all this? Your loved one. So what? As long as your breath is around, maybe got some meaning. But when the breath is not around, your entire entity also gone, erased. Then how can you own things? Then what is there? Who died when the breath stops? Who died? No one died. Nothing died. That's why because of delusion, you get yourself conditioned and trapped. Then all of this, you cannot attach the thing you perceive. Then your mind state means your views and opinion, your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your like and dislike, your duality. All these are created by your thinking, your thought, your mental activity. Then everything that you become conscious of, like very real. Now you open your eye. You created all this, isn't it? Cameron Highland Retreat, Brother Theo with Yogi, everything come around. Through what? Through your consciousness. You can see them consciously. You can hear. Then arise already, real. Close your eye, disappear. But you never inquire. You never meditate into it. You never find out inside. What is this consciousness? What is this mind? What is this aggregate? That's why you cannot understand why this guy is not you. And it's very difficult for human being, I tell you. That's why Sakkaya Ditti, self-delusion, is very, very deeply ingrained. And it's very difficult to break free. A lot of people thought, oh, I'm so tapan already. you may think you're sotapan, but when you confront this reality, you're still miserable. Understand? You still don't understand what this five aggregate of form and mind is. You still got a lot of ego, I, sotapan already. That's why you go to Ajahn Chah's monastery. Wat Pat Pong. Don't try to be an arahant. Very big sign. The moment you become arahant, you're gone already. Who become arahant? Yeah, this form in mind is not you. Then you want to be an arahant. You want to be an arahant, then this form in mind become you. But this form in mind can live like an arahant. That one is a true statement. Understand? Because of the wisdom, after you meditate, you connect to your nature, the direct seeing, see everything, understand the characteristics of your nature, then this form and mind transform. Understand? With the wisdom, it knows how to live. That's why no more suffering. This form and mind, arahant, correct. But not you. And people cannot understand. They want to be arahant. So, the moment you become arahant, this form and mind is you. Then what? Sakayaditi. That's why the awakened one very different one. So this is the essential summary. Almost 12 o'clock, I have to end. I have to finish off the second noble truth before we continue next session. So after the first noble truth, the Buddha tell you, these are the realities of life and existence. This is very real, is it? You must understand this noble truth. This noble truth of suffering is to be understood, is it? You don't understand, you don't understand life. So when you understand, how can you free? How can you work towards your, what they call, goal to liberate from this suffering? So the second noble truth tells you the answer, the secret, second noble truth. The Buddha said, whatever suffering you experience, you confront, there's a reason. The reason is, the cause of suffering is, cause of dukkha is, what? Is what? Ayo. They all in the textbook always say what? Craving. They use this word without understanding most of the craving. Famous Buddhists always say, cause of suffering, craving. What is craving? It's very precise, you understand. But what is craving? Attachment, clinging, grasping, even the negative one, dislike, understand? Craving is positive and negative, you know. Negative craving, your anger, your hatred, also craving, you know. Positive craving is your desire, your lust, your selfishness, understand? Then the negative craving is your emotional negativity, you know, your anger, your hatred, and all that, your envy and your jealousy, you know. Then your fear is also part of craving. And actually, craving covers delusion. Without delusion, there is no craving. So the cause of suffering is always delusion. Delusion. Or sakayaditi. Delusion or sakayaditi or self-delusion. Maybe the word self-delusion. Because you deludedly cling on to this. Self-delusion, that condition, that condition, your craving and grasping and clinging to this fine aggregate of form and mind. Asana. Form and mind. If you deludedly grasp and cling, suffering is the result. And craving, the Buddha said, there are three. Sensual craving. Craving for the sense experience. Your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Then the other one is craving to become something, to become arahant. Finish already. Arahant, no more craving, but you want to become arahant. Craving to be. Then craving not to be. Craving to be is to become somebody, to become the CEO, the big boss, or to become famous. Then when you realize you climb up the hot seat after you become CEO, there is a lot of politic office, then a lot of backstabbing. Then you crave not to be. You want to resign. So all this is what life is all about, the Buddha said. Then the consolation is, after he tell you this too, at least you know how to manage your life better. You know what suffering is and you know the cause. You can definitely plan your life, manage your life. Then the third noble truth, he make you very happy. He said, suffering need not be in this world. If you have the wisdom, then Nibbana, which is enlightenment in the here and the now, can be realized. That is the one everybody like. But you like, you never make effort. You never cultivate, you never serious. Even this retreat condition is so good, but you never put in the real effort, except a few who really serious. But hopefully after today's sharing, it make you contemplate, reflect, and think deep into life. I was looking into all this when I was in Form 5. The moment I saw the Four Noble Truths, like I understood all this. And these are not taught in the book, I tell you. You cannot find them. Money also you cannot buy, I tell you. Then the Fourth Noble Truth is very good. The Buddha said, he don't only tell you can be done. He even tell you how to do it. So the Fourth Noble Truth, the Buddha said, there is a Noble Truth that talks about Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. All of these First Noble Truth realities cease to be. You don't have to suffer anymore. Okay, we end. So we just pay respect the usual Thai tradition. Arahang Sammasambuddho Bhagava, Buddha Bhagavantang, then we pay respect to the Buddha, then Dhamma and the Sangha. Arahang Sammasambuddho Bhagava, Buddha Bhagavantang Avivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of your seat, then go for your lunch.